Welcome back to the Breakaway Solution Podcast. I yesterday had such a wonderful conversation with Charlotte Pointo, and she does a lot of work with young girls, so tweens and teenagers, and she also runs women's circles as well. But she does a lot of work around educating girls and, you know, about their menses and also things about self-confidence and how to find who they are in a world where we are often, you know, feeling like we're not allowed to be who we desire to be. That's quite, you know, loud and not designed and set up for that in a sense. And we spoke about a lot of things surrounding the pressures that young, you know, girls feel and the way that, you know, menses and menstruation and those changes in our lives are dealt with in schools in, you know, quite a medical and scientific way that doesn't really open itself up to the potential that it could. And I have wanted to speak to Charlotte for quite a long time, like over a year I had spoken to her about coming on the podcast. Because obviously being a woman, I have felt a lot of times in my life as I'm on the outside and that, you know, it's quite difficult to navigate who I am and what I want out of my life. And I feel like a lot of female students feel the same way. And I had also spoken to one of my colleagues when I was still teaching, and this was, you know, quite a while ago, over 10 years ago probably now, and she had a huge desire to set up, you know, space for girls to discuss, you know, things just as women, just as girls. And so this conversation goes through all of that, and it's such a rich conversation to be had. So hope you guys enjoy this one. It's a special episode. I don't do very many interviews, which I'm trying to change so that I can, you know, get all of this information out to the world for you guys. But if you love it, make sure you like it, make sure you share it, and let us know what you think. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really lovely to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We just switch moves like this, right? Been watching your work for such a long time that you probably know, you know, liking all your posts and things for such a long time. And I'm really intrigued and interested in what you do. Especially with like girls, like tweens and teenage girls and those types of things as well. And I don't know, sometimes I feel like it's still like a taboo topic and a topic that a lot of people, I've seen a lot more people discussing, you know, like self-confidence and, you know, menstruation and all of those things that we go through as women and girls. But I still feel like it isn't spoken about as much as it should be. And I don't know, like even as a, you know, woman, I feel a lot of the time silenced as to, you know, open and honest, like what it is like going through, you know, the cycles and going through even like the emotions and emotional responses attached to that. And so I'm really, really intrigued about what you're giving out to the world. So run us through, like, I can't explain it really well, but run us through what exactly you do for your line of work and, yeah, what you're trying to put out there.
Thank you. Yeah, I love, I've really enjoyed connecting with you. Thanks. And following your work as well, and I think it's really great work that you're doing. And thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about this, because I'm really passionate about guiding women and girls to embrace the wholeness, really, the wholeness, and as part of that, at our core, we are cyclical beings, we're cyclical people. Once we start our menstrual cycle, we, you know, our hormones basically mean that we are different every day of the cycle, from the first day of your period until your next one. Our culture is very much set up to treat everybody as if we're more like the sun. So we are the same rhythm, you know, every single day we get up in the morning, we have a busy day, you know, we come back, we go to bed, we get up the next day, rinse and repeat every single day. And that's really coming from a place of capitalism, really wanting to get the most out of our bodies and our beings and our productivity. And we're still living in this way that doesn't honor the fact that we aren't like men, and you know, the male hormone biology means that every day they do have this pattern that's like the sun, it's the same, and they can get up and go to work and go to school and focus and have the same levels of energy, and it's consistent in that daily rhythm. Whereas for girls and women, we aren't like that. And there's no awareness of that. There's no talk about, you know, these differences. And we grow up feeling like we have to hide our changing bodies, the fact that we have menstrual cycles, and also the fact that we don't feel the same every day. We don't have the same energy. We don't have the same ability to be creative or to focus or to work hard every single day. Like, it changes. There are different points of our cycle when we are better suited to different things. And so it really sets us up to disconnect from our bodies and the way we are, from our femininity in a way, like our womanhood, you know, what our experiences of living in a female cyclical body. And so I'm a cycle coach. I'm trained as a life coach as well, and feminine embodiment coaching. So I bring together these skills to work with women and also with girls, like I say, to help them to understand the changes that we go through, to understand, you know, for women, like, what your own unique cycle experience is, because it's a myth that we all should have 28 day long cycles. Like, that's like the average. So there's a very small proportion of the population who has like this textbook 28 day cycle. And, you know, actually for a lot of us, it's longer or shorter, and it can, you know, differ between as well. So understanding what it feels like to have your cycle, to understand that, and to understand how you can work, like, run your business or you know, work in your job in a way that helps you get the best out of your cycle, parenting as well, just let generally your health and well-being, looking after yourself. And for girls, what I did some youth mental training as well a number of years ago. And I've got a background in education, in professional sectors and higher education. And because I'm so passionate about us reclaiming this part of ourselves, which isn't just a small part, like, this is who we are. I created what's called First Moon Circles, which is menstrual education for tween girls, so girls aged 9 to 12, to come and learn in a really holistic, safe, nurturing, supported space about what the period is and what the cycle is, you know, as being different, like the period being just one part of the whole menstrual cycle, about the fact that, you know, it's not just this thing our bodies do, but it's actually really important for our health, that we can embrace it, we can feel prepared and supported, we can, you know, look after ourselves from a practical point of view in terms of, you know, sanitary care, but so that we can also be embodied people, like reclaim our bodies, reclaim what it means to live in, you know, and to be a cyclical person, and to take it out of the shame and taboo. Mm-hmm. So these are really holistic spaces, circles. We're not just talking about, this is what a period is. Now here's some pads or tampons, go and, you know, use that, which a lot of people, you know, even in this generation now, certainly in generations past, mm-hmm. that has been the level of yeah. education that's been provided, you know, either by schools or yeah. parents. And, you know, I hear all the time women saying that they, when they started their first period, they were, you know, so terrified, horrified, mm-hmm. massively embarrassed. Lots of people didn't even tell their parents, their mum, that this was happening to them. And if they did, then they were just thrown a pack of tampons and yeah. the only education they got was like the little instructions in the yeah. tampon packet. You know, and it's been shamed for so long. It's so difficult for people to talk about, even now, yeah. that, you know, we really need to bring it out into the open. And so what my work is to create these beautiful spaces where girls come along for a couple of hours to hear about, you know, the basics, what it is and what's going on, what the changes are, what they can expect. And you often see them, the girls sat there going, you know, because there's a chain of events that happens generally in this order
yeah.
from the onset of puberty to when your first bleed starts. Mm. And you can see them going, oh, well, I've had that change, but I've not had that change yet. So they can kind of gauge, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, all this stuff that they just didn't know. We talk about period care, but then we also talk about self-care mm-hmm. and like what the seasons of the cycles are, like these different phases, what it feels like, how the moods might change, how you can look after yourself. And we bring mums in as well to have a little celebration.
Yeah.
We make like a beaded bracelet together and, you know, really honor it as a rite of passage yeah. that it is, and bring it out into the open. So we're also opening the lines of communication between mums and daughters so that mums are supported to have these conversations with their children, and children feel like they can see that mums can talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and we do a lot of support for mums as well, because some mums are super open, have been talking to their kids about this for years.
Yeah.
Other mums are kind of going, I am dreading this, and I like really don't know what I'm going to say, and I hope that school's just going to deal with it.
Yeah.
But even for mums who are really open, sometimes their children don't want to talk yeah. to their mum, and it's they've internalized the shame that they've picked yeah. up from school or the playground, from the media, or, you yeah. know, it's just everywhere, menstrual shame and body shame. And so, you know, you know that old adage, it takes a village. You know, these spaces are there to help help to just have that conversation and open up a support space, and so that the girls can have something that their mums might not have had as well.
I think that's so important. Like,
yeah,
I find like a lot of, even now, even the education that the girls get in school, I think a lot of the time as well, because it's given to the whole class at the one time, I think firstly that creates and it sort of sustains that idea of, you know, shamefulness. But it's just so, boy, it's like so scientific that there's not that holistic element there that a lot of the girls aren't getting that access. They're not getting, you know, can you imagine what a change it would make if we had mentors like yourself going into schools and working with girls, you know, all through the years, and doing these types of open workshops where, you know, and perhaps that sounds ridiculous, don't even give them a choice in it, but just, you know, just getting the girls all together to experience what even that holistic nature of, you know, the period and the cycles and the emotions and things are, because I'm only learning about that now. Like, you know, 33, and I'm only now like, oh my God, that makes so much sense, you know. And I know a lot, like in, you know, the I think a lot of like the self-confidence that comes out for girls or is hidden for girls is all embedded in that, the way that, yeah, schools are not dealing with it. And it's just another subject. It's like, oh, yeah, PDHPE, we've got to do this now. Tick, we've done that. And that's the end of the conversation. But, yeah, sorry to interrupt, but I was like, oh, my goodness.
No, you're so right. And, you know, I think there's this thing where parents hope, not all parents, of course, but some parents feel like it's the school's responsibility. Mm-hmm. School goes, well, like you say, tick, we've got, yeah, we're going to do this one, maybe two classes. Yeah. Tick, done, never mentioning it again.
Yeah.
You know, and I also hear from girls saying that, you know, schools in this area,
mm-hmm,
they don't even have sanitary bins in all of the toilets, or they're only accessible in like certain toilets, yeah, in the school, and they're not available in primary schools.
See, isn't that...
And of course, you know, girls can begin their periods at age,
yeah,
8.
Yeah, that's, you know? And I think that's interesting that you make that point, because I remember myself being in primary school. Like, I didn't get my period until like year 9. So I, yeah, was quite late compared to everybody else. But I remember one girl in particular in primary school, and she had just developed a lot earlier than us. And it was like year 4 or year 5. Like, mm, even now, like,
bless her.
Yeah, oh, I'm like horrified. Hard. Like, oh my goodness, like, I cannot imagine just being a girl and going through those changes, but it being like swept under the carpet, or not having sanitary bins in, you know, the primary school, or that's
and not being able to talk about it with, like, yeah, her friends not knowing because, yeah, they're not going through it yet.
That's it.
The teachers being, you know, girls also tell me that they ask to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
And the teacher's like, why? Why? What are you up to? It's like, are you going to make me tell you? Yeah. You know, especially male teachers. It's just not in their awareness.
No. It's,
and teachers need,
yeah,
a bit of support.
Yeah.
You know, with this as well, like, I hear, and I might be wrong, I'm not a teacher and I've not worked in a school environment, but I hear that it usually comes down to the teacher who's prepared to go and do a little bit of, like, who's going to take, yeah, this on, and there's not, yeah, really much training,
yeah,
in to help them deliver this. And, of course, that teacher's bringing their own,
mm-hmm,
lived experience, their own relationship to their body and cycle, their own upbringing, their own discomfort and shame, mm, around it as well. And if they're having to teach boys as well, like, mm, that puts them in quite a challenging position.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see, you know, and we all know what kids are like. They might secretly be sat there going, I like really curious, I want to hear more.
Mm.
But if the group think, yeah, is we're going to giggle and make a laugh, make a,
yeah,
you know, this is uncomfortable, so we're going to
play up
a bit, that just, it just, the whole thing just stops.
Yeah, yeah. And then the, nobody and has. Then it's too hard, and then the teacher's, yeah, like, well, I'm not going to do that again because of these reasons. I think, yeah, yeah, like, it's quite, you know, it's still, like, in, especially, like, department schools, or even, like, you know, religious or secular schools like that as well, because there's so much of that taboo and fear, and, you know, teachers are worried about what they say or discuss in the classroom in case it comes back and that person's, like, doesn't like that, or they're horrified. But can you imagine what difference it would make if they were just open and honest and were able to have those conversations? Like, it would pretty much, I don't know if I'm exaggerating, but it would change a lot of lives for females, for young girls, you know, for teenage girls, to not feel, maybe it's just me, but to not feel like...
No, I don't think you're going too far. I would say it would change the world.
Yeah, it would really, wouldn't it?
It would.
And even just their perception of who they are as a person, you know, if I could have figured that out, I'm still trying to figure it out, but, and be comfortable with me, you know, like, mm-hmm, I'm still trying to be comfortable with who I am, and that, you know, these are the things that I enjoy, or these are the things that give me confidence. But if I was able to do that when I was, you know, a tween or in teenage years, how would that have actually changed my whole, you know, trajectory, I can't even speak, of, you know, the journey that I've been on to this point? Like, it would have even just confidence, just self-confidence, putting things out that, you know, I really believe in, strongly believe in, even if people give you weird eyes in the process. But can you imagine what that would do if they were exposed to that by female teachers in those school environments?
Mm.
It would completely change what they're experiencing.
Can I just say, you're so right. I want to say two things. One, if any teachers listening to this and you want to hand off this job, I am available. Yes. I am so eager to get into schools, and I've not found it particularly easy. Yeah. But if this is, you know, not, I've approached some schools and that hasn't been much openness to, to the idea, and because, you know, I think it's one of those challenges of getting parents, you know, and funding, and how does it fit into the schedule and all of those practical things. But I would absolutely love to go into schools and just completely create a completely different energy, a completely different environment. Two, you're so right about how much this does change people's lives and the imprint it has on our whole life.
Yeah.
It's so... I just want to explain a bit about the rites of passage. You might have heard of this phrase. The physical rites of passage for women. So we are born. That is one.
Yeah.
The next is our first period.
Mm.
The next one is becoming a mother, and then reaching menopause, and then death.
Mm.
So it's these physical transitions, these developmental and spiritual, you know, on all levels. Evolutions, transformations, when we, you can't go backwards. You can't go back from that. And they are, you know, biological as well. So around, you know, our menstrual cycles.
Mm.
So, you know, for boys, it's birth, you know, becoming, like reaching adolescence, becoming a man, growing up. And they don't really have... you know, like midlife is, you know, not really a rite of passage as such. And then death, you know, there's cultural rites of passages as well, like starting school, learning to drive, being able to vote. But in terms of these physical ones, these are just, they're so deeply important and impact who we are on all levels through and through, how we approach life, how we feel about ourselves, what we feel is possible, how much confidence and self-worth we have. Because what rites of passages do, what they used to do in more traditional cultures, is that the whole community comes together and celebrates all of the people who are going through these rites of passage.
Mm-hmm.
It teaches you what to expect, how to prepare, how to function and succeed once you have crossed over into this new phase of life. You know, so when you're thinking about girls at their menarche, which is the name for their first period, this first rite of passage, what happened traditionally would be, this is what it means to become a woman, this is what your role is in society, this is what it means to grow up and to be more responsible. You know, and you can think about how we don't prepare teens, you know, boys as well, like this is what it means to be a responsible young man, and you know, we desperately need this. But for girls, it teaches you the value of being a woman, how culture values our worth as females, the value of the mother as well, like the you know, the carer. It teaches us how, you know, how we should feel and value and have worth around our bodies as well. You know, you're thinking about girls who are beginning their first periods. They're deeply ashamed. They dissociate. So they don't, you know, you feel like your body's a separate thing to you.
Yeah.
You feel like you don't trust your body because you don't understand what's going on, and you can't predict it. It hurts. And the more that we are dissociated from our bodies, the more pain we can have as well.
Mm.
So if you're trying to resist it and fight it, you know, we can have these menstrual symptoms, the side effects. So there's these things. And then as you're growing up, you're feeling like you don't fit in, you don't belong, you don't understand, you know, your worth. You know, lots of women, girls become people pleasers as well.
I feel like you've just described me. That's just me. That's exactly, that's everything.
Right, yeah.
You know,
and then with some girls, you know, we're talking about, sex as well. So how we approach our first sexual encounters, our first relationships, consent, like how empowered we feel to say yes and no and make choices that feel good to us rather than what we think we should be doing to please and fit in.
Yeah.
You know, and it all comes back to how we honor
puberty
and the first periods. If a girl feels like, this is important, this is special, I understand my body, I trust my body, I'm connected to my body, I know that I am being supported, I'm being prepared, everybody is around me is not talking about me and talking about my changing body in front of everybody else, like, oh look, she's getting boobs now, period must be first, which is so common. Yeah. If we can treat her like she is a sovereign being, and by sovereign I mean able to make her own choices and take a bit more responsibility for herself and has control and autonomy over her own body, and we respect the cycles and the periods, and we can even role model that as adults, then girls are going to grow up like just so powerful, but so much more able to move through their life making decisions that feel good to them. We're better able to reach our full potential in the workplace, choose better partners, be more supported and better mothers, have the births that we want, because all the rites of passages mirror each other. So how we go through our first period informs how we become a mother. So, you know, do you feel, when you get to the point of having children and giving birth, did you feel supported in that? Did you feel like you had a choice in that? Did you feel like your opinion and your what you wanted out of that mattered, what you heard? You know, it all ripples on, and then it ripples on to menopause as well. So the
Can
whole attitude of do we honor what our body's doing, the aging process, is it something that we're, you know, a lot of women I hear feel invisible and unseen and irrelevant post-menopause and with the aging. And this, it's all part of the same thing.
Yeah,
so by honouring the first period of this puberty in this way that's holistic, so not just physical, it's about the emotional, mental, spiritual, it includes self-care, all of this, if we can do this, it just sets up their life, which ripples on to their children, their family, their friends, their community, the way our whole system works.
Isn't that
revolution?
And that's the whole incredible thing. So can you change though, like can you change your outlook on the next step in your life? Because I'm like you, like I said, you, it described me in a nutshell. People pleaser, feel shame, don't feel like I can be who I am. And a lot of the time, like, I am going down at the moment, like, a spiritual path, which I feel quite connected to and I have for a very long time. But I'm constantly, like, that person over here is like, oh, that's a waste of time and that's ridiculous. But then you feel like, but that's what I actually, I'm feeling called to this. So it's like this constant thing, right? But can you change what your next phase is going to look like when you're like, holy hell, like, you know, that's just
what an awesome question, thank you for asking, because the answer is absolutely yes. And I think once you start to learn about you know, and a lot of us now are doing this in our 30s and even 40s and even post-menopause going, oh my God, all these things I didn't know. And it's bringing up a grief that we didn't have this earlier on. So when you start to learn, it's like the way you see life changes. Because once you understand the cyclical approach to life, which can span from eating seasonal foods, which can span from having like and valuing rest and like slowness and pleasure and you know, not just being on and hustle and burnout all the time like we are really conditioned to. So once you start to figure all this out and, you know, connect with your menstrual cycle is a really powerful way of doing that, just noticing, even just noticing, you can start to think, well, this is how it's been for me and I want things to change. So you can absolutely change it at any point, even if you're postmenopausal listening to this going, it's too late. It's not. There are all kinds of things you can do, but it all starts, I believe, with going back and looking at your experience of your first period, that rite of passage for you, how you really doing some reflective work, which can bring up a lot. It can be quite painful and sad. But to look at how you were supported and guided, how you were received, you know, by your family, your friends, the community, you know, whether it was something that you felt supported in, knowledgeable in, etc. Really doing some journaling or just thinking back. You can get out pictures of you at that time and think about the things you were into, like music and what kind of books and TV shows and who your friends were and what kind of clothes you were wearing. Just connect with that part of you and give her a bit of love and think about how that was. Then think about how you would like things to be different if you could go back. But, you know, using that to help you think about, okay, so what, how do you want to move forwards with your life? So, you know, if you're wherever you're at in this journey, you can start to think about how you feel about your womanhood, your cyclical nature, because even after menopause, you're still, you're on a lower level, like your hormones aren't cycling up and down like they would if you were having a menstrual cycle, but you're still a cyclical person. Your biology is still different to males. So just connecting in, noticing what your relationship is to pressure and to rest and to pleasure. Is this something that you just think like, oh God, I've got no time for that. Like, what's that about? Like,
you can say that, but I think that's really interesting that, you know, there's so much to being a woman, like even something like that, like pleasure, like we're told again, like when we're younger, that that's not something that we should enjoy or not something that we should like seek out or make ourselves feel. Does that, I don't know if that makes sense.
Absolutely, but,
and so that's like,
And I think for a lot of us, like the word pleasure, people instantly think of sex. And I just want to make the distinction as well, like, you know, sexual pleasure absolutely is something that every woman deserves to have. But even just pleasure, like choosing things the way she lives her life,
that she enjoys,
eating the breakfast that feels pleasurable to her rather than like the thing that she's like, oh, I just do this every day because I'm doing it. It's a habit. Or wearing clothes that make you feel good. You know, going for a walk and feeling the sun on your face and the wind in your hair and listening to the birds, or it can be so simple, but making choices that feel good to you rather than doing the things that you should, you think you should, in order to either be successful, be liked, or to you know conform to what's expected of us.
And I think that's the whole thing, like firstly, like, where does that even come from? Like, who in their right mind decided that that's the way that everyone should be and everyone should run their lives and everything? You know, who just decided that that's the right and that's the wrong thing? And then, you know, how, like, do you navigate that as well? Like, how do you, like I said before, it's this constant pull, like, well, I find these things pleasurable, or I really like the day when it runs like this, or, you know, I really get more out of my business when I do these things, or, and then the pull on the other side, like, but no, this is what you should be doing, and you should do this, and then, but like, I don't want to, you know, and I think sometimes, again, like for young girls as well, like, we feel like, well, you shouldn't do all of these things. You, again, should, who decided that you shouldn't do these things? But they could be anything. They could be anything on the planet. Mm. But who decided that that shouldn't happen, or that you should, you know, do this? Even then, this is like a complete sidetrack as well. But I see it a lot with HSC students in particular. And I have so many deep conversations with them about, you know, you don't have to go to uni. We don't have to go and find a job straight away. You don't have to, you know, do these things that we feel pressured to do, even, you know, not just women, but male students as well. You don't have to. But then again, it's still shamed if you're doing something that people don't consider, or people don't, I don't know, I was going to say consider that as the norm, but again, like, we're so conditioned to that, aren't we? We're so conditioned to this is what it should look like and this is what you should do, rather than it can be this. And it can be anything. Like, that's the, you know, it can be anything.
Yeah. It all comes down to, this is ancient stuff, right? So, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, we used to live in communities where, you know, that's like I said, it takes a village. Like, we used to live in villages, and we used to be in direct relationship with the land and the earth and the seasons and the cyclic way of life, you know, growing crops and
moving to different areas than the crops.
All of that stuff, like, it goes back. It's like in our DNA, like, so far back. And then when organized religion came along, the powers that be started to take land off the female. Land used to be owned by women. It was matrilineal and passed down the female line. Oh, and it was all the land was bought by the church, and land was privatized. And, you know, you had to, they started to set up this structure, this power structure, where you had the rich, powerful elite, and everyone else was working and trying to survive and part of this system. So very briefly, you know, it goes back a few thousand years when all of this started to come in. But, you know, women used to be the natural healers and the herbalists and the midwives, and, you know, and then not that long ago, these power structures created universities that were only open to men.
That's it, isn't it?
And it was like, if, you know, women were not allowed to go. And that's when, you know,
same as writing or reading. Women weren't allowed to know how to write or read, and it was a male. Like, that's, sorry.
And, you know, we could, well, this was when, you know, and it's not extreme to say, this is absolutely fact. This is when any woman with knowledge of anything like this would be burnt as a witch. And so we've got this it's in our lineage, like, it's this thing of, like, you've got to do what you are told to be safe. You know, and not, like, this affects, like you say, men and boys, not just women. It's this, you know, with industrialization, it's all about, we've become commodities. We've become machines. You know, it's, and like, what's our output?
And isn't that the most terrible thing, that it's a machine? Like, we are being treated as we are machines. And anything that we do separate, where we're trying to come into ourselves and come into our being as a whole person, is seen as left field, so, like, kind of thing. Keep going.
No, you're right. But like, you know, we've got this whole culture, the whole Western world.
Yeah.
And we've completely, we've lost so much of our traditional indigenous cultures that did not operate like this, that operated more cyclically.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're very disconnected from it, and it's become so, like you say, conditioned was the word you use, like passed on through the generations, that I feel like now more of us are starting to look up and go, especially with things like COVID, like it's quite interesting. COVID's rocked the way of the world as we knew it. And like now the structures are not what they were. You don't have to go to your workplace. You can work from home. You know, we've got children home with us much more. But also, you know, people are moving out of the cities and coming like down here, for example. So much more of our work has gone online. Like things are changing, and the way that we have always done things are changing. And so there's that in partnership with, you know, I think more of us are starting to become aware of how things are and how things could be and what would feel better to you, even if you don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
I think this is probably like the first generation where it feels a lot more safer anyway to question and to do things differently and to talk about these things. Like the fact we can have this conversation today is incredible because not long ago,
you wouldn't
that
even
you just wouldn't
know.
Right?
That's it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's acknowledging where we have come from, the fact that, you know, women have always told their daughters, keep your head down, do what you're told, to be safe, right?
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, you've either been somebody who's assertive and loud would be called bossy or bitchy.
Yeah.
Somebody who, was really creative, you know, that wouldn't have been accepted either. You know, our emotions, we've been called like irrational and, you know, women used to get locked up in mental asylums. You know, there's this whole history.
And there's this whole history. And that's it. It's still coming through, though.
What brings us here.
That's going back to, like, the generational stuff. Like, I can still see it in different people today. That, obviously, it's something that they have been told is right or correct or, but those terms like, oh, you're crazy because you have emotions, like,
and coming back to the menstrual cycle, oh, is it that time of the month
again, is it PMS,
the shaming,
and
it's like, actually I'm angry because I don't appreciate the way you're treating me or the way I'm being forced to live. And I'm angry about that.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a terrible relationship with anger. Like, anger is a really powerful emotion for tearing things down and going, I don't want that anymore. Yeah. This is what I want. Of course, it's about expressing it, channeling it healthily and safely.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've just got such a disconnection to our emotions and our bodies.
Yeah. And it's this whole, like you said, generational thing. Like, it's filtering from such a long time, and unless you're the person that is trying to make that change, and obviously you're not going to make that change in people around you, but you can make that change for yourself if you can reflect on your, like, generational and be like, oh, hey, hang on a minute, like, that's not exactly what I'm wanting to create, like, curate my life to be, basically. But you've got to notice that.
It's just noticing and questioning, and questioning is really important, you know, and we are, I have this real thing about, I remember being in school and, you know, like, you had to put your hand up, if you're asked a question, and, you know, sometimes you get picked on and I remember the fear of answering a question was so strong with me. I used to, like, wish I was invisible because if I answered and it wasn't the right answer, you know, even in a subject that's, like, more creative or more subjective, like, you know, English, for example, if I didn't give an answer that wasn't, like, acceptable, it was like, you know, the shame of that.
And it's still there.
The pain of it.
I think that's interesting because it's still there. Like, I, again, have conversations with students all the time, and I'm always saying, well, is that your thoughts and your ideas on, like, the text, whatever the text is you've read, or is that your teacher's thoughts, or is that, you know, and it's this whole, oh, but I'm not allowed to think that because that's wrong, when it's like, you know, anyone who reads
something. You actually want them to use their imaginations and make their own.
That's it. And, you know, like, I also remember that fear of being, I guess, picked to do, like, similar questions, or the one that I used to really, like, really drive me up the wall and I just couldn't handle was the snake, and they go round and every person has to read like one or two sentences, and we're reading this text as a snake. Oh my goodness. I remember being in class, and it wouldn't matter whether it was like history or science or geography, and I remember going, all right, which way? Which way does the snake go? Which way? And then counting how many people, and then counting like, what sentence am I supposed to read out? And then trying to like read the sentence 1,000 times. So that then that fear and that shame of even not being able to pronounce something correctly, you know, was diminished. And, like, I remember it so vividly, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, my goodness. Anyway.
It's just that whole system is set up to, this is what success looks like and means, and any other way is, you know, it's not, excuse me, it's not valued, but we just don't live in that world anymore. No. We live in a world where we need to adapt and have ideas and be open to change and to, you know, we're as strong as our diversity, as everything is.
That's it. But even just to, you know, widen our views and understanding of, you know, everyone is entitled to, you know, find themselves or that version of themselves that they connect to the most and cherish that or encourage that. A lot of the stuff, like in the past, probably in the last 2 or 3 years, I've done a lot of, you know, building, like not just with the business, but a lot of that is the, you know, figuring out who I am as a person, and even, you know, revisiting my life and thinking about how, you know, all of these things have led me to this point, and, you know, embodying my spiritual being and my spiritual self and all of those things. And I just wish that I'd had access to that earlier. I wish that, you know, and I know that part of that is because of the things that I'm watching and interacting and, you know, taking in. A lot of the business world at the moment, for the people who are very successful, is that it's that, hey, this is what I do and this is how I keep myself together, basically, but allow myself to build what I'm wanting to create. And if that was, like, if that information hadn't been available, I just, you know, it's a process. It's such a big process. Yeah, but it's quite interesting. Like, it's more acceptable. It's more, I guess, spoken about. That's probably the biggest thing, like, with social media, although it's, like, can be bad. It can have. But I think because there's more people talking about, you know, spirituality, or even, you know, menstruation, cycles, all of those things, because more people are talking about it, and it's like being, I don't know, like, I don't think accepted or acceptable is the right word, but because there is more people talking about it and discussing that, even just the impact that knowing about your cycles and knowing, you know, how to live your life as a more holistic being, I think that's making it more noticeable in the world. And even on, like, a side note, I remember for my HSA, I did PDHPE. And one of these things in that was this whole discussion on holistic health and being a holistic being, and, like, obviously it was in the scientific, you know, realm in a way, but I really connected with that holisticness, the, you know, we're all holistic beings and that type of thing. And that's why, you know, now with like my tutoring company, I'm trying to get that mix, the mix of the skill and the teaching with holistic, you know, like, I guess, probably not holistic education, but holistic knowledge, like for our students. But it's hard, you know. A lot of the staff I have are teachers or past teachers, and they're still very much in that yes, no, right, wrong type of mindset that they've been conditioned to. But it's that whole holistic nature. And I think in education, we need to change it so that education is more holistic in its conception in the first place. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, that was a massive
sidebar. But you're right. Like, you know, the way that's set up is, you know, it sets up our children from such a young age to see that this is how life is and how to operate, you know, and how to move through your life. And you know, so school is such an important, you know, for a lot of kids, it's the first setting they're in outside of the family home, you know, maybe preschool or daycare. But, you know, as they're starting to have that awareness and starting to notice what the world is beyond them and looking at, you know, what their place is in the world as well as teens, it's, you know, it's, they're there every day and it's such a powerful role model, like an example of you know what it means to be a person in this world. And I love what you said in there as well about how you can run your business, because I'm really trying to operate my business in a way, and I work with a lot of women as well who on changing the structures and the way that they structure their business and show up in their business into this more cyclical way so that we can have, you know, especially as women and mothers, you know, we've got so much on, you know, but it takes such a lot of unlearning and undoing.
Reflecting
and being really firm and clear in yourself and what you actually want and why you want it to make these changes when, like you say, everyone else around you is pushing back going, that's not how you do things. So, you know, I think the more that we can talk about this stuff, show a different way when children are younger, and it all goes back to honoring the cycles and the menstrual cycle being the one that's in our bodies.
So
beginning with the menstrual cycle, it's really and the seasons around you, you can look to the seasons of nature for clues about how to live in a cyclical way, like with winter being like a slower time, and then spring, you know, growth, and summer being this peak and this outward full of life energy, and autumn being about slowing down and letting go and coming back inwards again. It's you know, the clues are in nature, and we are nature. That's why I'm so passionate about it.
That's so fascinating. Thank you. We've kind of gone a bit around the world today, but it's so fascinating. I think that the more that we can empower, particularly like our teenagers, yes, but they're probably harder to change at that point. But the more that we can provide that to younger, you know, our younger girls, and even like I think like my daughter, like she only turned 4 the other day, but how much those different things can change her perception of herself and the world around her, and then what that will look like for her is like a huge thing for me at the moment.
Normalizing it.
Right. But I think the main thing is the celebration and really helping the girls foster that it's not something that should be hidden, and it's not, you know, it's not taboo. It's, you know, something that needs to be discussed and spoken about. I think that's the Yeah, that's the biggest thing. How have you been running your workshops at the moment? Have you had to cancel them or have you moved them online? Or?
Well, that's a good question. I was meant to do one in person last weekend. And so I've put it on hold for now, and I'm hoping we'll have to see what happens, that this can run in maybe late October or early November. But if not, then these can absolutely go online. So, because I teach other people how to hold their own first moon circles.
Yeah.
I've got a facilitator training. And within that, we've created a structure of how we can run these online. And so they work beautifully. There's been women who are starting to hold theirs online because of lockdown.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's something that I'm thinking about. And, you know, it's still really, be it an engaging space. It wouldn't be, you know, like sitting down at school, like with the school Zoom, just kind of all on mute and just watching. It would be very, very nurturing and, you know, a special occasion. And so, yeah, watch this space. But if you have a daughter who's age 9 to 12 and you're listening, the next one will be as soon as we come out of lockdown. Yeah. So if you're interested, then I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and you run them in Mittagong, don't you?
Mittagong, yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that should look into it. And you also run women's circles as well.
Yeah, I've been running for 3 years in the Highlands monthly women's circles. Mm. So just a space to come and sit and be, you know, all of you, like all of you is welcome. And you don't need to kind of feel like you've got, you know, yourself together that day if you're feeling a bit knackered and tired and whatever, you know, it's a nice place to come and just be and connect with like-minded women and to have a bit of relaxation and self-care time and reflection time. And if you have a spiritual practice, then, you know, it's very much a place to drop into that. So I've done some online, but we'll see what happens when lockdown ends. Unfortunately, a bit unknown at the minute.
Yeah.
As you well know.
That's it. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for chatting today. Where can people find you if they want more information?
Yeah, thank you. So my website, it's my name, so charlottepuanto.com, and I can send that to you, Elisa, if you maybe pop that down somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm also on Instagram. It's at charlotte.puanto.coach. And if you're specifically wanting to find out more about the first moon circles, then I can direct you to the first moon circles Instagram as well, which is at first_moon_circles. And that's sharing everything on what first moon circles are and about, and a lot about the facilitated training as well. So it's not just me, it's more of a hub for whole thing.
Perfect. I know lots of people will be eager to look at that. And I 100,000% every time you do the women's circle, I'm like, I really want to go. So hopefully.
You'd be so welcome.
But thank you so much for jumping in today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for chatting.